The following episode of Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Whole Foods Market is proud to support the independent farms and small businesses in our communities. Here's what's fresh in their produce departments this week. Note, availability is subject to change. From New York, yellow plums, sugar plums, red onions, and sour cherries. From New Jersey, peaches, green peppers, eggplant, cucumbers, leeks, shiitake mushrooms, spinach, arugula, red and green leaf lettuce, radishes, green and yellow squash, mint, sunflowers, and orchids. From Connecticut, currant juice and assorted sprouts. For more information on Whole Foods Market, visit their website at www.wholefoodsmarket.com.
Fish heads, roly poly fish heads, eat them up, yum. Fish heads, roly poly fish heads.
Yo! What's up? Welcome back to Catch It, Cook It, and Eat It. I'm your host, Ben Sargent, and I have brought chowder ingredients today. I taught a class at the Meat Hook yesterday in Williamsburg. It was a blast. And I have many, many clams and all things chowder left over from last night. Thanks so much for everybody who came out. It was a blast. I ruined one chowder in front of a class. That was kind of embarrassing. But induction ovens, if there's anybody out there who has ever worked on induction ovens and knows how to work them, teach me, because they're really difficult. Anyways, so we're making a New England clam chowder today. One of the easier chowders to make. And I don't do a lot of cooking myself on this show. I usually have my guests do the cooking. So I thought maybe it was a good idea to, make something I know how to make and use up my ingredients. So here we are making a traditional New England clam chowder. Sort of the more rustic variety, I guess you'd call it. By that I mean, like, you know, rough cuts, sort of a farm style. We're not going for perfection here in any way. So when you dice things like potatoes, don't worry too much if they're all the same size, because they're going to get, the small ones are going to actually get crushed, and they're going to become we're breaking up the starch, and the starch is going to be what thickens the chowder. So those little pieces will become the thickeners, and the big ones will become, you know, whole pieces in your chowder. The same can sort of be said for the onions. They don't have to be perfect. We're starting with salt pork. Salt pork I like over bacon, just because it's not quite as smoky. It's not smoky. Bacon's smoky. Salt pork's not. We're using quahogs today. Quahogs are like the size down from chowders. It's a hard-shelled clam. They're common in the New England area. I was in Cape Cod a few weekends ago, and I was digging my usual spot. We have a clam bed out there, and did not come up with one clam. So that means somebody's been poaching our family clam bed. So it really actually isn't ours. We sort of let a shell fisherman work that spit. So it means that he's probably just, I don't know, taken everything there and moved on, leaving us with no clams for the family. anyways, the salt pork's in. We're rendering that. That's kind of it serves two purposes. One, it's like putting some oil, you know, kind of like some fat in the bottom of the pan. But it's also going to add a lot of flavor to it. And salt pork and bacon go back to this, 17 something, when they first wrote about chowder. And they used meat on board the boats because they didn't think that fish provided enough protein, or the right kind of protein. They didn't think it was healthy for you. So it's sort of, over the years, it's just become almost a tradition and a part of chowder making that you include, you know, a pork pork of some sort. But don't leave it out. I mean, if you can, if you're a pork person, put it in there. And if your family's not, sneak it in there. And so we'll be starting with that. Those are little cubes, tiny little cubes. And then in another pot, I'm actually cooking over a little Weber grill. In another pot, we have our clams, kind of steaming our clams open. And that's going to be our broth. Nothing to making a clam broth other than a couple inches of water. Not even an inch of water. And you know your clams are done when they open their faces. Now I'm just mincing a little garlic with a filleting knife, which isn't the easiest thing to do, but it's the one I have handy right now. So yeah, you guys should all go take a class at the Meat Hook. I am definitely gonna I did take a butchering class, which was cool. We did the whole pig. What do they call it? Snout to tail or something. I recommend it. It's awesome. They have knife skills classes there, which I think is definitely something I'm going to take. If you can look at me now, you'd understand why. They really know what they're doing over there, and it's pretty cool. So we also made lobster rolls, and I think the lobster rolls went over a little better than the chowder, to be perfectly honest. The chowder's not the easiest thing to make in front of a class. There's a kind of like, not that it's that hard, it's just that there's many steps, and you kind of have to pay attention. And I think had I not had, there was like this guy in the class who just happened to be a chef. I mean, like a serious chef, not a hack chef like me. And he stepped in there and he was like chopping all my veggies for me and like saving me on turning the heat down at the right time so we didn't like, you know, boil the crap out of our lobsters or steam the crap out of our lobsters. So anyways, the garlic is now going to go in on top of these, what you call cracklings. They're just the little cubes of salt pork. Salt pork, by the way, is like the back, the fat back. It's like the skin of the pig. And don't go to specialty markets for it. You won't find it. Go to, like, it's so weird. I searched high and low in Greenpoint, all the best meat markets, and ended up finding it at Associated. But you can go to Meat Hook. They have it. So anyways, our garlic is going to go in on top of our little cracklings. And we're just going to stir that up a little. Those should get kind of golden brown. If you have a high flame, that's great. I don't have a high flame, so it's a little harder here. But then you're going to throw in your onions. You don't have to measure very carefully in chowder making. Just make sure that you have enough of everything to balance it all out in the end. Like, if it's too salty, you want to make sure you have enough cream that you can add that. I say cream and not milk. You can do milk. Okay, the onions are going in here over the cracklings and the garlic. But you can do milk, but be careful because, as I learned last night, milk curdles really fast. And actually, I was not even using milk. I was using half and half, which shouldn't curdle as fast as it did. But that induction stove, I tell you, it wasn't my fault. Yes, it probably was. But next, we're going to go with our thyme. I have some fresh chopped thyme here. Just going to throw that in, take a few of the stems out. Okay, in, that's done. and I'm also going to throw a bay leaf or two in there, which my recommendation is take out at the end. Definitely take out at the end because they're really strong. I'm going with littler bay leaves. Fresh bay leaves versus dry bay leaves. You need, you know, one or two fewer if you're using the fresh stuff. If you're going dried, you might want to add one or two more. so that's going to do its thing. The clam broth is, you shouldn't check on it too much, because every time you open that pot, you're going to lose the heat. So check on it once or twice. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes on a normal flame, and you are going to want to, hold on. You are going to want to stir them once What happens is the weight of the clams on top of each other will prevent them from opening, and you want to be able to see that they really, really are opening. But as soon as they're open and you have that nice sort of frothy thing going on in your pot, they are ready and your broth is ready. And I always say err on the side of like taking the clams out a little early, because you know they're going in your chowder, and you don't want to cook them too much. You actually don't want to cook them at all past the point of steaming them. So cut the steaming a little bit early. They don't all have to be open. If some of the clams are open and others aren't, that's totally fine. I'm going to go ahead and throw some butter in here. I think you should buy the nice butter. I do. That Kate's butter is awesome. There's so many sort of small farms out there that you can feel better about supporting, you know, to the butter, to the cream, to the all the things that you choose in the supermarket, and you're only going to be charged a little bit more for each one. And I say do it up, especially with a chowder, because you never want to skimp on a chowder, you know. Background on New England versus Manhattan, if you're gonna force me to talk about this, is that here's the story. Here's how the story goes. I believe it was Johnson had an inauguration here in New York, and the sous chef that night put tomatoes into the clam chowder when he meant to put potatoes. And at that point, it was go time, and it was too late. And they're like, oh shit, what do we do now? And they're like, we'll call it Manhattan Clam Chowder. And that is how that horrible, disgusting stuff ever came to be. I'm putting a little pepper in. A little pepper. Alright. Now, keep in mind, if I was on a nice high flame, this would be going. So we're going to make the sound effects for you here in the studio. Nat, do you have any sizzling sound effects in there? Cue them up. Alright, let's see. Where's my top? I'll throw the top on to try and speed this process up. Good stuff. I don't know what you call these pots, but they were my mother's pots, and they're beautiful, sort of ceramic. What do you call them? Glazed. They're glazed. They're bright red, and they're really awesome. thick pots. That's the answer to a chowder. Thick pots. That's gonna basically means you don't have to stir as much. So I suggest the thickest pot that you can find. It'll hold its temperature and it'll keep the temperature really even. And that's really what you're going for. And now I'm gonna check on our quahogs. Quahogs need a little bit of time here. A little time. When that broth is ready, you are going to do two things. You're going to A, take out your lovely rough cut potatoes. Use a medium starch potato, like these are Yukon Golds, or you can use a Prince Edward Island PEI, or what's the other one that's good? Like a Maine potato is good. Don't you want that medium starch, not like a high starch, and not, you know, if it's not starchy enough or it's too starchy, you're going to either have your potatoes breaking down too quickly, or they're never going to break down. And in this case, we want them to partially break down. So that's kind of the trick on that. All right, let's throw our potatoes in. I would say 10 to 15 minutes, your onions, your garlic, your salt pork, and your thyme. All of that, about, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. Soften the onions. Don't brown the onions. After that, go ahead and throw your potatoes in, which I'm going to do right now. Potatoes are in. Don't worry. I've never seen a chef do this. I've never seen a chef just throw potatoes in without, you know, something kind of watery, liquidy in there. But we're going to... It's just for a second that we're kind of browning them almost with the onions. We're softening them before we go and put that clam broth in. The clam broth, by the way, is really potent. Us New Englanders, or even anyone sort of in the Northeast, New Yorkers, all of us, we don't realize what advanced seafood tasters we are. I'd say that sort of tongue-in-cheek, but actually it's true. Like, when it comes to oysters and clams, we have some of the briniest, most seafood, sort of sea-tasting, pungent seafood in the world. So we're kind of the end of the list, you know? You start over on the West Coast with, like, Kumamoto oysters, and you move your way all the way up to, you know, the shit that we eat on a regular basis. So I think we can pat ourselves on the back a little bit for being, you know, advanced oyster swallowers. So as far as those quahogs go, you know, keep in mind that it's going to be a very, very strong flavor from the sea, and your whole job is going to be a balancing act, whether that's putting a little bit of cream, you know, in. Even, I shouldn't say this, but even in certain cases, I've had such briny batches of clams, you know, the waters they came out of were just, like, unbelievably salty, and I actually added a little sugar to the chowder, because even at the end of all the cooking and all the onions and all the garlic and all these things that are supposed to cut that pungency, it was not enough. A little sugar was helpful. These guys are opening slowly, but they are, which is good. Okay. Pretty soon we're probably gonna have to take a little break. You'll have a nice song, and by that time I'm hoping, praying, that our clams have opened all the way and we have a really good broth to work with. So that was the first segment of Catch It, Cook It, Eat It. Come back and we'll pour our broth over the chowder. Back here, elbows into the chowder. God, who picked that song? Nat, was that a tune you wrote back? Jeez. By the way, guys, Whole Foods is our lovely sponsor today, and Whole Foods, I might add, has some nice seafood. So you should go there and get some of your lovely seafood there, and then that way your seafood no names mentioned won't be dead when you pull it out in front of a class, which is really embarrassing. So careful who you buy your seafood from. Really, that's why I go to Red Hook for lobsters. That's why I go to the Fulton Fish Market when I'm buying my fish, because if you're in a pinch like I was and you rely on some not so reliable seafood sources, your seafood comes out limp. You pull it out and you're expecting water to be flying and legs to be kicking, and you come up with a limp lobster. Nothing worse than a limp lads. All right, well, I'm going to force the issue here, which is we should have these clams completely open by now. We would if we had a good flame, but we're going to go with what we have because we do have a broth at this point. We do have a broth. There is a broth in the studio. All right, so at this point, you would do kind of a gross maneuver here. You're going to pull these suckers out, trying not to burn the crap out of your hands. Don't do this at home, what I'm doing here. This is dangerous stuff. This is for advanced chowder makers only, who have no feeling in their fingers. Yeah, have some tongs when you pull the clams out. Have some tongs at home. I did this in a really stupid way, and I'm paying the price here. You can't tell that I'm cringing in pain. but yeah, anyways, so you pull your clams out. They will have opened almost all the way. And then you're gonna cut the meat. As I said, cherry stones, chowders, quahogs, they're all the same clam. That's a confusing thing sometimes because they're advertised as like a different, you know, variety of clam. They're not. They're just, it's a size differentiation. So those clams look beautiful and the broth is looking okay, not as brothy as we want it. So you're going to take your broth now. Your clams are out. Some people strain the broth. These don't look particularly sandy or anything, so just hold the sand back. Don't pour everything in. And it's kind of a 1-2-3 thing, and you just, it's like, you don't need a sieve, really. What do they call those bonnets? Those, like, top, what do they call it? Like a China cap or something? You don't really need that. You just need to not pour it all the way, so that the sand stays in the bottom of the pot. hold on one sec. I've got an unruly clam here that doesn't want to get out of the pot. Okay. Here we go. So the broth is going to be poured over the potatoes and onions at this point. And you want it just enough to cover the potatoes and onions. Again, we're not really measuring here. There's no sense in measuring because everything, you're just eyeballing everything. And you just want it to cover the potatoes and the onions, which it has now. And this is great because at this point we can move the little stuff that we had our stock, our broth going on this one pan. We're going to take that off so we can move our chowder pot to the center of the grill. This is an experiment. If you're out with the family doing a little tailgating and you want to make a chowder, I guess it can be done because this is working, sort of. Okay, so at this point, I have those hot clams cooling down a little. They're slightly on the undercooked side. I'm opening them. These, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, were currency back with the Native Americans. They called it wampum. And I think it was the purple color that you got in their shells. And that was like a form of money, which is pretty cool. We don't know exactly where chowders came from. We're imagining that they must have come over from, you know, very cold English fishermen who needed to be warmed up. The first chowders were probably disgusting because they were made with hardtack. And hardtack is kind of like if you imagine taking a box of saltines and grinding them up and throwing it in your chowder. That's pretty much what the early chowders tasted like. That was their starch. They thought that potatoes were poisonous back then, so they didn't have potatoes in their chowder, and they didn't have cream, because on a boat, you definitely didn't have any cream. Sorry, I'm prying a few of these guys open the rest of the way. You had no dairy on a boat that was out for months and months at a time. So, in place of dairy, I mean, I don't think they had any form of evaporated milk. So, you know, you're putting your, probably just some water, seawater in there. You're mashing everything up. The fish you were using, if you were using, you know, haddock or cod probably, would have been salted and could be many years old, dried and brought, you know, down into storage. So, you know, you're talking about, like, not the most flavorful thing. And then we talked about the meat that was in there, some kind of pork that would give you your what they thought was a good supply of protein, which, of course, we know now we didn't need at all. But I think this is where some of the flavors came from. But then what you had is all these places like Maryland, you know, North Carolina, probably Massachusetts, New York, Maine, New Hampshire. I mean, all these places where the coastal flavors originated, they began to mix with the more landlocked states that were working on totally different kinds of chowders. They call them farm chowders. So that's like where your corn chowder came from, where there was no seafood. So luckily, we live in a very good chowder time where the melding of flavors has happened over many years. And so now you get, you know, corn and shrimp chowders, or corn and lobster chowders, which is pretty yummy. You know, certain things like leeks have come into chowder making, or endives and fennel and... Oh, by the way, if you want to add fennel to a New England clam chowder, go for it. It's awesome, and it beats the hell out of celery. I can say that much. If anyone wants to call up the radio station right now and tell me why celery is a good thing, I invite you to do so. Celery's gross. Hold on. Let's just see. All right, so got my clams. My clams I am now cutting in half. Why in half and not in quarters? Because otherwise, why would we have used such big clams? Like, you want them chewy, you want a lot of meat. And not chewy, gross chewy, but you want like a big bite of clam in your clam chowder. That's kind of the point here. So again, leave the clams out to the very last minute. That's the most important thing, because the clams have cooked. They've done their thing. It's kind of like shrimp. You don't really, once, you know, shrimp you throw in, or scallops you throw in right at the end of your cooking. Same deal. Well, not the same deal, but I have really, really tender clams right here, and that's the way you want to keep them. If your potatoes haven't softened, and you find out after you've put your clams in, that your potatoes aren't soft, then you're gonna have to cook the chowder more. And in cooking the chowder a little bit more, say 10 minutes more, you are gonna totally destroy your clams, and they're gonna taste like the bottom of a shoe. So I would just say check like more times than you think that your potatoes are soft and that everything you're dealing with is on the soft side, okay? To check for that, you can take the side of your wooden spoon or slotted spoon and mash a potato literally against the edge of your pot. If it mashes, well, then it's soft. If it doesn't mash, then it needs some more cooking time. But do it with the smaller cuts, the smaller potatoes, because if you try it with one of your bigger potatoes, well, that's the one that we want to stay... We want that potato to be whole. So we don't want it to mash against the side. The little ones were mashing against the side. Oh, I'm taking a taste of rock hard potato. It's burning my mouth and doesn't taste good. Trying an experiment here. I'm gonna try two experiments. I'm gonna cover the pot, and I'm gonna close the top of our grill, our Weber. Weber should be our sponsor, man. They make this little, awesome, tiny little go-anywhere barbecue, and it's awesome. You can use it just about anywhere. I use it at home, but you can take it on camping trips and Yeah, share grilling love with your relatives, friends and relatives. Unfortunately, I didn't grow up in that kind of a family. We never had big grill-offs. We never mastered barbecuing. Nobody in my family is good at barbecuing. We came pretty close to mastering, New England style clam bakes, but I actually can't say that we really even nailed that. But we tried. We definitely tried. Let's see. The funny thing about like a lot of things like lobster rolls in my family is that lobster rolls were actually a cop-out. You were almost teased if you ate lobster rolls, because a lobster roll was like admitting that you didn't like the work in eating a lobster. So you were shunned if you were a lobster roll eater over a whole lobster person in my family. It's just funny that we're in this craze, this lobster roll craze in New York City right now. And yeah, man, we're all the the wuss seafood eaters. The real ones are eating lobsters. Okay, so at this point now, we would hope that we had a ferocious boil. Our potatoes are in with our onions and everything else that we started with. And we want to cover the pot, which I did. And we should be, I mean, that thing should be boiling like crazy for about 10 minutes or until our potatoes soften. Then, like I said, we test our potatoes against the side of the pot. We're going to smash them, just a few, to thicken the chowder. And it's a good time now to go with your half and half. Half and half. Heavy cream, those are sure bets. When you start dealing with 1%, 2% milk, that makes a great chowder. I love it, but it's dangerous. Now you're playing with fire, because that can curdle if you don't watch that pot. And it's like burning a soup. If you burn the soup, even a little smidgen at the bottom, you can have 30 gallons, 100 gallons, I don't care, 500 gallons of soup in one giant cauldron, which will be ruined. And it's the same with curdling milk. If it gets too hot, you're cooked, you're done. And that won't happen as easily with half and half or whole milk or heavy cream. Not whole milk, sorry, heavy cream. Or like even whipping cream, you know, throw some of that in there and you'll really be safe. This isn't a dieter's chowder. I wouldn't recommend it if you're trying to watch your waistline. That might explain why I'm looking like I do these days. Showing the beginning signs of a lot of chowder making. It starts at the love handles, folks. Chowder love handles. I'm putting our half and half in. All right. Now this is a control, because you want your chowder white. And if it's still a little bit brownish from the salt pork, the cracklings, the onions, all that stuff, you're using your cream to not only add, you know, flavor and richness and all that, but you're also using it as a color control, because you want a white chowder. So just pour away until it looks like the kind of color even that you want. And I'm now adding just a little bit of heavy cream over my half and half. Provided your potatoes are soft, now would be the time to start adding things like clams, quahogs. I use a little bit of white wine, and I probably should have put that in a little while ago, but I think white wine is almost essential to a really good chowder. I once made chowder for a friend, and her husband happened to have like a $250 bottle of white wine. He said, just throw it in there. Man, that was the best chowder I've ever had. Hold on. Okay, here we go. This is of the $2.50 variety of white wine, which is also good, but not quite as good. Okay, that's good. That's in there. I use little things like, just a hat of Old Bay. It also it has things in it like celery salt, which I think is nice when you hate the taste of celery. Celery salt is an okay alternative. Old Bay for me is just kind of like my security blanket. If you put it on everything, it's gonna taste better. So I walk around with a can of Old Bay in my back pocket, and in my car I have about 30 pounds of Old Bay, and that's not an exaggeration. It's the biggest thing of Old Bay you've ever seen in your life. I have toasted up a bread bowl, which in my neck of the woods is not very traditional to chowder and chowder eating, but it is yummy and fun. So I got this sourdough bread bowl, and I lopped off the top of it, and I think this might work on the grill nicely. And then I'm gonna toast it face down, pull out all the sourdough so you have like a nice sort of cleaned out interior, and I'm just gonna rest that on the side of the grill and see if I can get that to toast a little bit. Meanwhile, I'm still here with my creamy chowder, hoping that my potatoes will soften just a little bit more. But that's just the result of cooking on a Weber grill with pots. It's kind of weird. Okay. Did I mention butter? I did. Go with, what is it? I don't know, 4 or 5 ounces of butter. Go with like a half a stick. I'm sorry, 4 tablespoons of butter. Half a thing of butter or more is essential to a good chowder. I should have told you on things like the, if this is, you know, for, this is probably a chowder for 3 or 4. So we're talking like, I don't know, sort of a pinky finger, a teaspoon of thyme, right? We're talking probably about 8 pounds, maybe less, maybe 6 to 7 pounds of potatoes, 2 onions, go with like a good Spanish onion, I think is medium, like a medium Spanish onion. And your quahogs could be chowders. They could be as big as chowders or as small as cherry stones. And if you have even something smaller than that, you can use the shells. The cherry stone shells are perfect for this. Steam them open with your big quahogs, and then float the shells afterwards in your chowder, and it adds like a really nice little touch, especially when none of your seafood comes from anywhere you know about. It adds that home style feel to it. I like dill, so now would be a good time to add a little dill. Dill's one of those herbs you want to add like down the road, not right away, because it doesn't improve with time, whereas thyme does improve with time. So throw a little bit of that in. Be generous with that, because I think it's awesome. Nobody called in to tell me why celery's bad are good. I know why it's bad. It's bad because it tastes like something processed. It was like they were trying to emulate a vegetable out in the wild, and they didn't quite get it right. Okay. So these potatoes, these smaller potatoes, I'm guessing, are just about right for thickening up our chowder. Chowder, by the way, comes from, we think, the word for cauldron, chaudière, or chaudière, something like that. I don't speak French, but it's a French word. So it comes more from the cooking implements than the soup itself, if that makes any sense. It's also, there's a similar word for fishmonger in French. And the two, we think that that's really where it came from. So, that's all the history you're going to get out of me, because I'm not so good at that part. But you can believe that I know how to make a chowder, because you're not here to taste it. And the guys in the studio are going to not vouch for its goodness until after the show is over. So you'll never know if this is a good chowder or not, but take my word for it, just by the look of it, it's already looking pretty awesome, I have to say. And that's due to the sort of buttery sheen that you get on the top of a chowder that just looks awesome. I'm tasting it. It's really yummy. It is definitely briny. So we could add a little bit more cream. I don't think we're going to. I think we're going to add our clams at this point. Because also keep in mind that the onion is still releasing flavor. And that's going to get sweeter and sweeter and sweeter over time. And another kind of interesting thing is the chowder should be cured. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other things that require curing time, but it's a really good idea to let your chowder sit for like a half an hour or more. And you can even throw it into the refrigerator and heat it up, because like so many things, it just tastes way, way, way better after heating, reheating. So let it cure. Try and save yourself enough time for that. Cut some chives as a nice garnish. I mentioned the cherry stones, or even like smaller manila clams. You can use the shells are beautiful for floating in there, and maybe some parsley. You can always fluff it up with a little parsley as a garnish, and that's kind of it. That's really all there is to it. God, I wish I could give you more insight into chowder making. Stir. Heavy pot, and have fun. Use fresh local ingredients if you possibly can. We're toasting our bread bowl here, and man, that looks good. So we're gonna put our bread bowl kind of over here, and see how this goes. Our clams at this point are gonna go in. Okay, clams are in. And I'm going to do a little bit more heavy cream because there was some broth in the bottom of that. And then I'm also just going to mash up a few of those lovely potatoes against the edge and see if we can thicken the chowder just a bit. No need for a roux, no need for any kind of thickener, cornstarch, flour, all that horrible, gross stuff. Don't put it in your chowder. And then, last but not least, we're gonna ladle out some of our chowder into our bread bowl. New Englanders do a even grosser thing, which is they then finish their chowder with a dollop of cold butter, as if you didn't have enough butter in there to start with. Just in case you felt you missed the butter experience, top it off with a pat of cold butter. Yeah, that's looking good. So that's in our sourdough bread bowl. We've got our onions. I'm gonna throw our little bit of our chives over the top. Thanks to my sous chef, Pete, last night, who cut all of this stuff really well. And, oh my God, I discovered a cracker. It's called a Vermont. It's not a common cracker. It's called like a Vermont cheddar something. Artisan cracker? That's it. Buy them. They are unreal on top of your chowder. It kind of resembles a little oyster cracker, which is really traditional to chowders, but I'm telling you, if you can go out and cut the heat at this point. If you put your clams in, take your pot off, and you'll be in good shape. And if you have some razor clams, you can stand those up in your. Those look really nice as a garnish. You can always stand them up on top of the bread bowl, kind of, and putting a tiny bit of parsley on the side here, and then you just stick a spoon in it, and you can put the top that you cut off, toast the top as well, put that sort of, you know, on the side, and you're donezo. So you have heard it here at the Heritage Radio Network. I am your host, Ben Sargent, and today we made a fine New England clam chowder.
Heads, fish, heads, eat them up, yum!